tornadoes and thunderstorms ripped through eastern Kansas and Arkansas Sunday, killing a motorist, damaging homes. There's going to be more and more of this. The weather is turning on us. Second-time reporter to testify in leak case. Washington is consuming itself with who said what when. There, I'm done. That's all the national news that I feel like I'm talking about. Now, this in a moment, I'm going to read a story to you that I think is really, really important. First, though, I guess I should say the Bell family as well. The webcam shot tonight. That's Dusty. Now, you can see Dusty has grown a great deal, not only with her shiny fur coat, but in her interests. Now, what's pictured in the webcam shot tonight is our bird, now an adult bird. We raised that bird once it fell out of the tower there at 80 feet. We raised that bird from babydom to what it is now, a full-grown bird. Dusty can be seen looking with great passion, intent, not good intent, at that bird. Now, we have placed two desert cactuses between Dusty and the possibility of getting to the cage you see suspended from the ceiling. However, Dusty is a smart cat. And what she's been doing, recognizing after some painful exploration that this cacti is not to be trifled with, she has begun to remove the spurs, little spikes on the cactus, one by one. It reminds me of a criminal trying to dig his way out of jail with a spoon and then getting caught just as he's about to surface. Now, that's going to happen because we'll just go out and buy a new cactus. If she takes every one of the little stingers off, we'll just go get more cactus. And she can go right on wishing. Anyway, that's the webcam shot tonight, worth taking a look at. I snapped that last night. Now, I'm sure that what I am about to read to you has been covered in previous shows. At least it damn well better have been, and I don't see how it could have been avoided. So certainly it has been dealt with. But as far as I'm concerned, we could spend the entire night on this one story. When, in fact, Ed Dames is due next hour, no, we've got lots to talk to him about, assuming he's there. I put in a call to him earlier. He hasn't returned that, so I don't know. Might not get him. If not, we'll talk about this all night. The headline, it's from Yahoo News, by the way, and the headline you should be familiar with as a listener to this program. The headline is, former Canadian Minister of Defense asks Canadian Parliament to hold hearings on relations with alien ET civilizations. Thursday, November 24th. So surely you've heard this or part of it at least. I'm going to give you the whole thing. Ottawa, Canada. A former Canadian Minister of Defense and Deputy Prime Minister under Pierre Trudeau has joined forces with three non-governmental organizations to ask the Parliament of Canada to hold public hearings on exopolitics relations with ETs. By ETs, Mr. Hellyer, I believe it is. And these organizations mean ethical, advanced, extraterrestrial civilizations that now may be visiting Earth. On September 25th of this year, in a startling speech at the University of Toronto that caught the attention of mainstream newspapers and magazines, Paul Hellyer, Canada's defense minister from 1963 through 7 under Nobel Peace Prize laureate Prime Minister Lester Pearson publicly stated, quote, UFOs are as real as the airplanes that fly over your head, end quote. Mr. Hellyer went on to say, quote, I'm so concerned about what the consequences might be of starting an intergalactic war that I just think I have to say something, end quote. Hellyer revealed, again, quote, the secrecy involved in all matters pertaining to the Roswell incident was unparalleled. The classification was, from the outset, above top secret. So the vast majority of U.S. officials and politicians, let alone a mere allied minister of defense, were never in the loop. Hellyer warned, the United States military are preparing weapons which could be used against the aliens. and they could get us into an intergalactic war without us ever having any warning. He stated the Bush administration has finally agreed to let the military build a forward base on the moon, which will put them in a better position to keep track of the goings and comings of the visitors from space and to shoot at them if they so decide. Hellyer's speech ended with a standing ovation. He said, quote, the time has come to lift the veil of secrecy and let the truth emerge so there can be real and informed debate about one of the most important problems facing our planet today. Three non-governmental organizations took Hellyer's words to heart and approached Canada's Parliament in Ottawa, Canada's capital, to hold public hearings on a possible ET presence and what Canada should do. The Canadian Senate, which is an appointed body, has held objective, well-regarded hearings and issued reports on controversial issues like same-sex marriage and medical marijuana. On September 20th of 2005, the Institute for Cooperation in Space requested Canadian Senator Colin Kenney, Senator Chair of the Third Standing Senate Committee on National Security and Defense, quote, schedule public hearings on the Canadian Exopolitics Initiative so that witnesses such as the Honorable Paul Hellyer and Canadian-connected high-level military intelligence, NORAD-connected scientific and government witnesses facilitated by the Disclosure Project and by the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium can present compelling evidence, testimony, and public policy recommendations. The non-governmental organizations seeking Parliament hearings include Canada-based Toronto Exopolitics Symposium, which organized the University of Toronto Symposium at which Mr. Hellyer spoke, the Disclosure Project, you know about that, a U.S.-based organization that has assembled high-level military intelligence witnesses of possible ET presence. That's also one of the organizations seeking Canadian Parliament hearings, by the way. Vancouver-based Institute for Cooperation in Space, ICIS, whose international director headed a proposed 77 extraterrestrial communication study for the White House, a former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who himself has publicly, of course, reported 1969 very close encounter of the first kind with a UFO, filed the original request for Canadian Parliament hearings. The Canadian Exopolitics Initiative, presented by the organizations to a Senate committee panel hearing in Winnipeg, Canada on March 10th, proposes that the government of Canada undertake a decade of contact. That's a decade of contact. The proposed decade of contact is a 10-year process of formal, funded, public education, scientific research, educational curricula development and implementation, strategic planning, community activity, and public outreach concerning our terrestrial society's full cultural, political, social, legal, and governmental communication and public interest diplomacy with advanced ethical off-planet cultures now visiting Earth. Canada has a long history of opposing the basing of weapons in outer space. On September 22nd last year, Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin declared to the UN General Assembly, quote, space is our final frontier. It has always captured our imagination. What a tragedy it would be if space became one big weapons arsenal and the scene of yet a new arms race. Martin stated in 67, the United Nations agreed that weapons of mass destruction must not be based in space. The time has come to extend the ban to all weapons. In May of 2003, speaking before the Canadian House of Commons Standing Committee on National Defense and Veterans Affairs, former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Canada's Lloyd Axworthy, stated, Washington's offer to Canada is not an invitation to join America under a protective shield, but it does represent a global security doctrine that violates Canadian values on many levels. Axworthy continued, there should be an uncompromising commitment to preventing the placement of weapons in space. On February 24, 2005, Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin made official Canada's decision not to have anything to do with the U.S. government's ballistic missile defense program. Paul Hellyer, who now seeks Canadian Parliament hearings on relations with ETs on May 15th of 2003, stated in Toronto's Globe and Mail newspaper, Canada should accept the long-standing invitation of U.S. Congressman Dennis Kucinich of Ohio to launch a conference to seek approval of an international treaty to ban weapons in space. That would be a positive Canadian contribution toward a more peaceful world. In early 2005, the Canadian Senate wrote ICAIS, indicating the Senate committee just could not hold hearings on ETs in 2005 because of their already crowded schedule. That doesn't deter us, said a spokesperson for the non-governmental organization. We're going ahead with our request to Prime Minister Paul Martin and the official opposition leaders in the House of Commons now, and we will reapply with the Senate of Canada in early 2006. Quote, time is on the side of open disclosure that there are ethical extraterrestrial civilizations visiting Earth. The spokesperson went on, our Canadian government needs to openly address these important issues of the possible deployment of weapons in outer space and war plans against ethical ET societies. The implications of this story are just incredible. And now, I've got a number of questions for you. Let me just quickly pose them, and if you feel so disposed to answer, please do. Number one, do you believe, as this would indicate, that they are here now, that they are ethical? Well, we'll get to that. Just basically that they are now here. Two, should our military, as in the U.S. military, prepare to deal with them? Now, that's not such an easy question, unless you can answer some of the following. In other words, should all weapons, for example, be really banned from space? What are the odds that they are, you know, are going to be our friends? What do you think the odds are they're going to be our friends? Now, until you can answer that one, you should be very careful how you answer number two, should our military prepare to deal with them? Since we don't know the answer to number four, it seems to me number two has got to be a yes. Now, I'm certainly not a fan of shooting at UFOs, nor weapons in space. But until we know their intentions, do we really want to hobble our own military so they cannot deal with them should it occur? Or if it is occurring now, do we really want to stop our own military from being able to defend us? You know, there are so many other stories that I wish I had time to get to. The snows failing to fall in the Arctic tundra is just not happening, folks. They're not getting any snow. The weather is, you know, clearly changing. Or this from BBC. CO2 level at the highest point in 650,000 years. 650,000 years. Or this, how the world will end. Very interesting story. Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country comes up with it in The Guardian. A reporter asked, get this, 10 scientists, why do all these things come out of Great Britain? 10 scientists to name the biggest danger to human life on Earth. Are you curious what they said? Some say we'll go out with a big bang. Others say Earth will have a slow, lingering end. Still others say we'll solve the problems. And will evolve into what, a type 2 or 1 civilization? According to British astronomer Royal Martin Rees, human beings have only a 50-50 chance of making it through the 21st century. He thinks our biggest threats, such as our global warming, are caused indeed by humans. UK researcher Nick Brooks also thinks that climate change is our greatest danger. Viennese researcher Richard Stindl says, our species has a predestined extinction date, just like the cells in our bodies. He compares these to telomeres, which are the protective caps at the end of our chromosomes. As our cells divide, they never copy their telomeres quite completely, you know, just like VHS tapes, never completely the same. And so slowly you age, slowly you die. He contends that eventually this leads to old age in humans, like cancer and Alzheimer's and strokes, and for civilization in general, exactly the same thing. You know, there is a birth, a life, and a death. But Stindl thinks that telomeres also get shorter as a species ages, meaning that every species is destined to eventually become extinct. Health researcher Marie Zambon predicts that a viral pandemic like bird flu will be the end of us. In some places, human life has almost been done in by HIV or SARS. She illustrates with those how quickly it can happen. A terrorism expert, likely, as you might imagine, thinks that that will do it, a bomb, a biological weapon, while defense expert Air Marshal Lord Garden still thinks nuclear war will do us in. NASA's Donald Yeomans thinks we're going to go the way of the dinosaurs, that our world will end with a meteorite strike. I saw a very interesting piece on Discovery Channel the other day about a meteorite strike, and one of the things that would occur with a big one is that the rock would heat, and the rock would heat with this incredible temperature that would race around and cover the entire Earth in something approaching the temperature of our sun, and that it might remain that way for thousands of years. They contend that nevertheless, life at the biological or cellular level would continue at some depths of the ocean and land and would once again emerge to bring forth life on Earth. How many times has that happened so far? We don't know. We know many. We suspect many would be a better way to put it. From the New Scientist, speaking of the little things, The New Scientist, a respected Japanese scientist who works with the World Health Organization, says the Chinese are lying. Liar, liar, pants on fire, says 300 people actually have died of H5N1 bird flu in China. 300! Including the 7 cases caused by human-to-human transmission. Now, that would be a monster of a story. This in New Scientist, I guess, part of the quotes. But he's claiming 300 people have died in China. My God, what a lie. And if the rest of it is true, that, human-to-human transmission has occurred, then that's even a bigger lie. The allegations, which he revealed at a meeting in Germany, contrast sharply with China's official position, as you might imagine. It reports only, well, get this, 3 confirmed deaths of H5N1 in people, a boy in Hunan province who recovered, 2 women who died in Anhui province, the latest of which was announced on Thursday. There may be another probable case in Hunan province. So they admit those, but here we have a Japanese scientist who's in a whole bunch of lies. There's 300 cases there, 300. Toshiro could not be reached for comment for the piece in The New Scientist. But others have said these rumors have been investigated. We've been told by the Chinese Ministry of Health that there's absolutely no foundation to them, said Dick Thompson, a spokesman for the World Health Organization. That was a quote to The New Scientist. So you can imagine my concern when I saw a story indicating that many people fear, myself certainly, is that human-to-human transmission already has begun. Now, we can't really nail this down for sure, but if it has, that's a very, very serious story. So we'll put that in Stanton's gray box for now. I think the big story is from Canada. My God, this is a monster story. Virtually, on the one hand, they're saying they are here, and we need to deal with them, and they are ethical, and they are moral, and they're good guys. That's one hell of an assumption, and that's one hell of a story. I mean, how could we not talk about this? How could we not? So do you believe they're here? Should our military prepare to deal with them by putting weapons in space? Should weapons in space be just banned completely? Or, what are the odds? This is really the key question. The last question is really the key question before you can answer the others, I think. What are the odds that they're our friends? Well, you know, this whole thing operates on the premise that they are, that they're ethical, advanced and ethical, and maybe they are. But what if they're not? So until you can answer that question, I don't know how you can decide that our military should not have something up there with which to defend us. I mean, most times I would just be going with horror, weapons in space. Good God. Of course not. But really, you know, you really have to consider the possibility that though this story may have accuracy in it, I'm not fully aware that we've determined that they're... Yeah, I know, look, they're advanced, right? Thousands, if not millions of years ahead of us, and so the natural inclination of people is to consider that these brutish acts that we conduct here on Earth, and always have, you know, from Hitler, and far, far before Hitler and far after Hitler, is just the way of the world. We're a warrior kind of people. So I guess it's a natural assumption to think they're good little guys and wish us nothing but well, but what if? What if that's not the case? First time caller line, you are on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. Where are you?
I'm calling from London, Ontario, in Canada.
Aha, the source of the story.
Yes. I guess my comment is that I don't think a politician is going to go out on the line like that unless he has something to validate it.
I'm with you. I agree. This is... What we see here, this Yahoo story, I assume it appeared in many places, but it's a gigantic, it's a monstrous story, and it wouldn't have happened unless there was something real behind it. So we're on the same page there.
Yeah, I do. As far as not having weapons in space until you know the motives of your enemy, I think the fact if they wanted to harm us, don't you think they would have done it by now?
That is... the logical conclusion. But when we're dealing with an alien life form, if in fact that's it, then can we depend on what seems logical for us? In other words, put another way, would you bet your life on it?
Would I bet my life on it?
Yes.
That they won't harm us?
That's right.
I think it would be a no-win situation if we went to war with them. So either way, I lose my life.
Well, and so you feel that way so strongly that you would say no weapons in space, period.
I don't know if we know what we're getting into, or maybe we do, but...
Let's try this angle.
Yeah.
Let's say... Then there you are on a cold Canadian evening. A giant light appears outside the door. You hear this humming magnetic-like sound. Something lands, and you're about to be abducted. You spot the beings, and it's obvious you're going to be abducted. Would you say to yourself, cool, I heard they're friendly. Everything's going to be okay. Hey, I'm not afraid.
In that situation, I'd be out cold, so it wouldn't matter.
In other words, you'd be so scared. You'd have fallen on the frozen Canadian turf.
I would be probably out cold.
That's a good, honest answer. So,
well, I think, Art, I know where you're coming from, but this is a very big story.
Yes.
And I'm just curious and interested to see what American counterparts or equal politicians, equal level, would come forward and validate it or dispute it.
All right. Here's what I think.
Yeah.
The early statement that there is something to this means I mean, I can't even imagine this would get released without the American government sort of winking and nodding and saying, well, yeah, it's about time. Let's do it this way.
So they're filtering it through someone else?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, we're famous for doing that.
Oh, yes, yeah. Okay, so you're testing the waters to see what type of response you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. And you've not, anyway, on the weapons in space part,
mm-hmm.
do you, I mean, at some point you have to tell the military, no, you don't. And here's Congress saying, and the Senate saying, no, you don't ever, not any kind of weapons. Or are you just concerned enough about who they might be that you would say, I guess we better keep planning for any contingency?
So if we're talking since Roswell, when there was probably contact since then.
Yes.
That's a long time ago. And what, 50 years ago?
By our standards, yes.
Over 50 years ago. But I'm just saying, don't you think in 50 years we would know what their intentions are?
I don't know.
I just can't see us working with someone for 50 years and not knowing what their intentions are. And if
yes,
we,
if you assume that that substantial contact occurred in Roswell,
mm-hmm.
and we do know what their intentions are, then why are we proceeding to build weapons in space?
Well, I guess the theory was that for other countries, to fight other countries, I don't know, on Earth. Because other countries are.
Well, maybe if it really gets bad, we can just take the Canadian arm on the shuttle and swat at them.
Yes, you can do that.
All right. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
You take care. Bye. You're on International Line. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is Louise calling from British Columbia.
Yet another Canadian. What are the odds?
Fascinating that it hasn't been in our papers or hasn't been talked about on our local radio or TV yet.
Really?
So this is really good that we're getting it from you, and thank you for doing that. Maybe now we can jar them and ask them what's going on.
I look at a story like this and I go, hey, it doesn't get any hotter than this.
Well, I'm really glad that you're doing this. What my opinion would be about whether I have fear of this or not is that we have a lot of space here in Canada. Like, for example, in the Arctic Circle, there are not many people here. We have a lot of open space.
Yes.
So perhaps that would be why we might be more concerned.
Well, meaning what? That they're going to move in and take the acreage or what?
Well, that they could be here and not seen quite easily is what I would feel. I've been in the Arctic. Space is unbelievable up there.
Well, you Canadians have all looked alike to me for a long time anyway, so maybe they're just mixing in.
You know, we talk about that here.
Oh, do you really?
Oh, yes. We're not sure who's here either.
You upstaged me. All right, so on the weapons in space question, how do you feel? I mean, if you were having to make the decision and you knew there were aliens, but you didn't know their intent for sure, would you order the weapons built or would you say, forget it, none?
I'm afraid that we're not capable of dealing with what energy they might be able to send at us if they want to.
There's a pretty good case for that. In other words, even if they came from, say, the closest possible inhabited star system, they would have technology so far ahead of us that they could squish us like we would step on an anthill.
I'm afraid we would be just like we were in the Civil War days by comparison in war with them. That would be my feeling about that.
I bet you haven't seen the new War of the Worlds yet, have you?
No, but I want to.
Well, it's got maybe the best special effects I've ever seen in a movie, but it's got what we could call the possible downside of contact.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. You know, that's the Canadian philosophy. It's on the bottom of our flag. Wait and see.
Actually, it's an entire way of living, isn't it?
It is, and it gets us by.
All right. Well, listen, my dear, I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
And take care. Take that Canadian norm and swat at them as they go by. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
You know what I was thinking?
What?
Now, I just came up with this, so you'll have to excuse my
conspiratorial
mind.
Let me get a couple basics out of the way. What is your first name?
Oh, it's Mark.
And where are you, Mark?
I'm in Mesa.
Okay, and now you're thinking.
Well, you know, there's an international treaty against arms in space. Now, what you had said earlier about, I mean, let's be honest, if they can travel these great distances to get to us, they could clearly squash us like a bug.
Well, there is that thinking,
but
maybe they're physical total weaklings. Maybe they're pushovers. Maybe they're crawling little turtles who have somehow evolved. And
that doesn't stop their little laser beams from cutting our heads off. I mean, come on, they've clearly got incredibly advanced technology. I mean,
so you have seen War of the Worlds.
Actually, no, I didn't.
No, okay.
I did see the first one.
There was a lot of lasering and disintegrating and stuff. It was pretty bad.
Oh, yeah,
Anyway, this is a giant question. Are you so comfortable, sir, that you would say, forget it, weapons in space, no way?
Absolutely, because they say necessity is the mother of invention, but the fact of the matter is the need to kill the other guy is the mother of invention. So it would seem more likely to me if we had weapons in space, we would certainly use them on each other before we'd use them on anything else. I mean, we're still, to this day, people kill people the world over. It goes on like a vicious cycle.
Well,
let's
enlarge on what you just said. I mean, you're absolutely right. We are, without a doubt, a warrior-like people.
Oh, yeah.
We're a warrior people. Now, any observing society, no matter how well-intentioned they may be when they just before they got here and began to look at us every day, what do you suppose they might be thinking now? They might be thinking, at the very least, quarantine.
Well, it depends on their intent. I mean, if they're really a peaceful race, they're going to just want to have nothing to do with us. If they're a little more on the shady side, they might say, hey, why don't we show you guys how to build the big gun? So, you know, it goes either way. But either way, there's nothing we're going to be able to build that's going to destroy them. I mean, just the idea of launching an MX missile to another galaxy, I mean, our sun would burn out before it got there. It would be a kind of a moot point. We would never destroy their homeland.
Do you think that you could explain this rationally enough to an American general, a typical military cigar-chomping, Pentagon kind of general?
I guess it depends on his clearance. Really, internally.
No, I'm just talking about the entire concept that you've been presenting me with, that they'd be so far advanced that there would be no point in even trying to defend ourselves because they would squish us.
Well, I think that's just common sense.
Yeah, but could you make that kind of common sense to a general who's in charge of defending?
Well, no, because they like to kill people.
That's their job.
Yeah, of course they're going to want to put weapons in space because, hey, what if China gets out of hand? I mean, we got to kill them before they try to cash in all our bonds.
There's a big one. Forget the aliens, just with the Chinese.
It's nice to have them for the aliens, but hey, if we have some more problems in Afghanistan, why send over troops we don't have when we can just hit them with our big gun?
Having said all that, you're still against it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would be strongly against putting weapons in space.
Do you believe that your thinking would carry the day in reality?
I would think that basically what this administration wants, this administration gets. This administration, in my opinion, belongs in jail, and they seem to get away with every lie they tell to Congress or the American people. So,
isn't jail a little strong?
I really don't think so. Outing that CIA agent, I mean, we don't know how many lives they put in danger with that. And to say that was just one lone man that did that, and no, it was an accident, it just doesn't float with me.
You don't think that story?
I think Cheney was sitting in a room with the guy and said, "Here's how we can get him back."
Don't you think it's blown a little out of proportion? No matter what.
How do you mean blown out of proportion?
I don't know. The whole thing of, you know,
outing,
yeah,
outing
one name got
out.
Is not
it's
good.
To blow that out of proportion.
I know. It's not good. But
it's really bad because it's
really
not
bad.
Just her that's put in danger.
Yeah,
it's everyone else that uses her front company.
It's really bad. Over 50,000 people die on our highways every year. I mean, just it's bad. But
yeah,
keep it
in perspective. Accidents. They don't die from Namnoe's bullets.
I know, but keep it
in. It kind of changes things.
Keep it in perspective. The amount of press time given to that versus some other pretty important things going on in the world right now.
You're going to have to clarify yourself a little bit.
Well, let me try again. 50,000 people plus die on the highways every year.
Yeah, and that's going to happen. I mean,
the only way
to change that is to take people off the highways, and that's clearly not
practical. All right, well, then you and I are not going to be able to. I'm just saying, can you not put it in perspective, the amount of press it's getting?
It sounds to me like you're trying to justify treason.
No. No. I would never justify the giving out of a covert operative's
name. So you
name.
Admit that was wrong.
Yes, of
and
course,
it,
yes,
it
absolutely.
Should be, it
but
should
I
be tracked down to the person who gave the order.
Yes, but I'm trying to say the size of the story, keep it in perspective with other things that are going on.
Well, it's national security. I mean, it's our national security.
So hundreds of people may be dying in China of a disease that could kill every last one of us, making whoever gave that name rather moot.
Yeah, that's a nice distraction.
It's a distraction. Okay, thanks for the call. It's a distraction? It's a distraction, bad as it may be, one name given, and it is bad. I don't deny that. I'm just saying keep it in perspective with the amount of press that it's received. My God. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, this is Jeff from St. Louis, Missouri, KTRS.
Yo, Jeff.
I emailed you that story about the 300 dying.
Oh, yes, in China.
Yeah, and well, there's more dying all over, and the doctors just don't know because they're rural doctors and they don't know what they're looking for. There could be 1,500, there could be 5,000.
You know, as bad as it may be, the whole thing that what worries me more than anything else is the apparent suggestion in this story that there already has been human to human transmission. Now, baby, that's a whole new ballgame.
And can I make a comment about the aliens?
Oh, yes.
There was a movie, TV movie, without warning, a fake newscast where aliens were trying to make contact with the use of asteroids.
Yes.
And we shot down the wrong asteroids, and then they just sent thousands and thousands of three-mile asteroids.
Yes.
From the asteroid belt.
I recall.
They don't even have
In fact, actually, it wouldn't take thousands. If you watch Discovery Channel, you'll discover that just one good-sized one would do in the Earth and all life other than...
Well, we took out the one and then the three, and then they just sent thousands.
Yeah, I know, but it wouldn't take thousands to do it. It would just take one big rock.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Well, that's all my comments.
The planet would boil, all biological. Thank you very much for the call. Bacterial life would die, except that which could descend into the ocean to a very critical certain depth, in other words, not too deep, or it gets too hot, or not too high, or it gets too hot because the surface of the entire Earth is boiling. But somehow, these little things survive. I'm salving my lust for radio by being on ham radio, and so we have this site up where you can actually hear what ham radio is all about, including hearing me when I'm not here. And that's smeter.net. That's just a hobby, though. It's very different. You'll hear us talking about technical stuff and all kinds of weird, weird stuff. Anyway, check it out on the net. It's a way to get kind of a secret little window into ham radio. smeter.net. smeter.net. And I've got that written on the webcam photo tonight. Now, this is really going to... Tonight's going to be something else. Ed Dames is the most loved and the most hated guest by any measure that we have on this program. The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward A. Dames, Major, U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer. He is an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serves as Executive Director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency. That's a private consulting group, the technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero. God, I hope you saw that great movie, Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise, Paul Wagner production. Ed actually coached Sir Ben Kingsley in the part and played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. Yes, I saw him, saw the movie, thought it was really great. Actually, it was a damn good movie, to be honest with you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome to the program.
Take me to your leader.
Man, we have got so much to talk about. This story is just, it's just a monster. I could do four or five shows straight on this story alone. Anyway, Ed, before we get started, I need to do like a little inquisition here. So.
Fire away.
All right. This will take a few emails, you know, from people. One. We'll start a softball here. Hey, Art. I distinctly heard Ed tell George a few weeks ago that he was moving to the Ukraine. Well, you told me that, too. I was kind of half asleep when he said that. Did he really say that? And if it's so, why?
I am moving to Ukraine permanently. In fact, I spend half my time there now. I'm moving there permanently in late spring for personal reasons. My fiancé lives there.
So now we're engaged to a Ukrainian gal, eh?
She doesn't speak English, so I'm crashing on Russian.
Well, I know you speak Chinese fluently. Now, what about Russian?
I'm learning as fast as I can.
I guess you're pretty good with languages, eh?
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now it gets harder. You always serve up the softball fast. Here it comes. Dear Art, I'm a longtime listener, Coast to Coast fan. Shows helped me get through graduate school in the 1990s. I'm now a history professor, how about that, at Indiana University in Bloomington, and have even used Coast to Coast in the classroom. Thanks for all the great radio. You're very welcome. He goes on, I'm writing this about tonight's show with Ed Dames in the hopes that you could ask him a few things. Dames is one of my favorite guests. It sometimes seems as if he sidesteps and slides away from the accountability moments that he has set up for himself. One, he said, one of the last times he was on, when the shuttle was flying again near the meteor shower, that he would not be surprised, that's a quote, if the shuttle did not make it back safely. He has always maintained that a shuttle being forced to abort a mission was a key happening. It did not get forced down, instead stayed up longer. It's not a big deal, but I noticed the last time he appeared talking to George that he no longer even mentioned the shuttle being forced down as the precursor of the kill shot. Two, the BTK killer. For years he's talked about he and his team would bring him in, that he'd be there. But then it appears that the BTK screwed up by sending a note that could be traced back to his church. Again, not a big deal. But after talking about it for years, when he appears on Coast to Coast, I don't think he even mentions the case has been broken. What happened? And perhaps the biggest, where's the gold? He's told you again and again that he would show up with gold bars, and when asked, he delays and dodges. Last time I checked, he was supposed to show up again at your house. Wasn't it in June for a great photo op? Again, where's the gold? So, you know, we've got that. We'll deal with those one at a time and then move on from there. Now, all of that is certainly true. On the other hand, Ed, as pointed out by another emailer, has had some pretty good hits, too. Some of his predictions, in fact, have been right on the money, according to Scott. It's just plain scary. I think his best one ever may have been when he said there was a big struggle in that Egyptian Airlines cockpit before it crashed into the Atlantic Ocean. Then the cockpit voice recorder, as you'll recall, proved he was exactly right. But he's had some big fat zeros, too. Now, let's deal with these, Ed, one at a time. I think the audience deserves answers.
Well, which one would you like to, which topic would you like to address first?
Let's take them in order. Number one would be the space shuttle.
The space shuttle I talked about on your show, not on...
That is correct, yes.
On your show. I said that two-thirds of the data ensemble were enough for me to conclude that that was the milestone for the beginning of solar hyperactivity. That the space shuttle being up during a meteor shower, during a time when the sun was producing super flares, the one thing that was missing was the idea of the shuttle being forced down by the meteor shower. That did not happen. But it was still, I felt, enough in terms of through a lens darkly, which remote viewing is, to hallmark the beginning of the kill shot sequence. I covered that.
To call it. All right. But the fact that nothing at all untoward occurred to the shuttle.
It isn't about the shuttle, though, Art. It's about the sequence of events.
Yes. But you used the event of what was about to happen to the shuttle as saying, okay, well, then here comes the rest. We can take this marker and say, then that's going to be true. And so nothing happened to the shuttle. Therefore, the obvious question is, does that mean that a precursor has not yet occurred? Hence,
Negative. It isn't about the shuttle. That ensemble of events that was the harbinger for what would begin to happen on the sun over a period of time.
Okay, I think I'm hearing that correctly. But again, it didn't happen.
The information ensemble happened. The meteor shower, the sun putting out X-class, mega X-class flares.
All of the elements were there, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's all that I'm saying. The elements were there. That was enough to convince me as an analyst, remote viewing analyst, that was the milestone we were looking for. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So you haven't, you wouldn't even conclude that to be a miss.
I'd say that the likelihood that was the harbinger event that remote viewers predicted, at least my team.
Remains true?
Remains true, yes.
All right.
With a likelihood of perhaps 85 to 90%.
All right, hold it right there. We'll deal with the rest. Hey, everybody. Believe me, what people remember more easily are the misses you had, not the hits, but the misses. So let's deal with another possible miss, or maybe not. I mean, maybe you will explain it as you did number one, the BTK killer.
If you remember, on your show, I said, in fact, after your show, George Nuri called me up at my house and asked me if we were responsible, if my team was responsible for providing information which led to his arrest, and I flat out said no. We all had plane tickets. In fact, my team's photos are up on your website tonight, every one of us. If you call those people up or have them call you, they will tell you we all had plane tickets, we all to fly in to Wichita, and just before we hotel reservations to go find this clown. And just before we left, about 5 days before we left, he was captured. So we flew into Wichita anyway and looked for a missing child. But that's pretty much the facts. We didn't get there before the police did.
All right. And then the final biggie here, he says perhaps the biggest, where's the gold?
Yeah, that first one was on private property. We had no access to it. That was a treasure that was actually a stolen some stolen gold on a robbery. So we left Flagstaff, Arizona, not being able to get on the private property, which was not on the topographic maps we had in the overhead. They did not show that the property was private where we located this stash. The second one, we announced the latitude and longitude, the exact geographic position of gold dust in Nevada, not that far from Pahrump. And two people went and staked a claim on that because my team and I did not want to own a gold mine. to extract gold dust from the soil.
Why not? Everybody wants to own a gold mine.
Because it would have taken a lot of time. That's not what I want to do for a
living. But you're saying since the program, two people glommed onto this area you're talking about and have filed actual claims.
Yes, yes. So now what my whole team is doing, and they're very upset that I just pulled them off of this target to go after Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, which we just sent information to Task Force 626.
Yeah, I can't imagine why they'd be upset. Zarqawi, gold bars. Zarqawi,
yeah.
Gold
this
bars.
This one, it looks like a Black Bart robbery that we're on to an actual strong box. And I have two team members who already went on the recon, matched our photographs, our sketches to the area. So we're going back en masse as a team to find this gold. And that'll be right after my clinic in January 21st, 22nd in Nevada, in Las Vegas. So we're looking at probably the first week of February as an entire team to go on site for this strong box. So I apologize it's taken so long. Mostly just mistakes, lessons learned in the field.
Well, if you really took them off the gold project, I understand why they're ticked at you.
Well, you can talk, like I say, you can talk to them and yourself and find out what their feelings are. Our report that went to Task Force 626 actually, Lex Lomwood, your web producer has. So he also has overhead at the town where we've pinpointed this individual.
You're going to have to communicate with me. I don't communicate with producers. I don't talk to them.
We sent overhead photography to your website manager, along with an actual copy of the report that we sent to Task Force 626, stating that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's present location is in the town of Arupa, which is the closest.
Yeah. Arupa, okay. We'll remember that.
It's the closest town to the border of Jordan, and that he's hiding in and conducting operations out of what appears to be a modified shallow underground drainage structure. So we're doing all the sketches and providing that through our contacts to Task Force 626.
All right. Well, you ought to know you'd gain an awful lot of credibility if you came to my gate and handed me six gold bars and went away.
Oh, yeah.
Providing at least a brief photo op before you left me the gold bars.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, credibility on the line here, Ed.
I know.
All right. Now, this one, and I'd like this settled in my own mind, be honest with you. Christina writes, Art, I just watched a special with Will Thomas about chemtrails. Thomas says the military is spraying chemtrails containing aluminum and other fungi into the atmosphere. This supposedly will reflect solar rays coming back into the atmosphere and help reduce global warming. This reminded me of a past show you had with Ed, when Ed remote viewed the future of fungi was eating all the crops and animals. He also mentioned humans were starving to death due to this fungi, and our state of mind would be, well, I can't read this on the air. Could you ask Dame, she says, if there's a connection with chemtrails and this killer stuff that he viewed?
No, there's not. And they are not spraying fungi. They are, of course, spraying other things, but it's not. Fungi is not part of it.
No, huh?
No. And the reason they're doing it is highly classified.
Does it have anything to do with climate control?
Negative.
Nothing to do with global warming?
Nope. Well, I mean, the consequences are affecting global warming, but that has nothing to do with the mission goal. DOD could care less about the ramifications of what they do. In fact, I and a lieutenant colonel once stopped a test that was so damaging to the atmosphere that we actually threatened to tell the Environmental Protection Agency about this top secret
test. How much can you tell me about what it was?
The test that I'm talking about?
You bet.
It was a test to try to mimic something that we saw the Russians do. And when the Russians did it, and if we were to do it too, it would actually blow portions of Earth's atmosphere into space, complete loss. It would actually not just degrade the atmosphere, but blow huge quantities, you know, millions of
Good
tons of atmosphere
God.
Right
you,
out in the outer.
Can space. You tell me how it would achieve that?
No, I cannot. I cannot. That's very classified.
And you're claiming this was stopped?
I stopped the test along with a female lieutenant colonel.
Can you tell us how you stopped it?
Yeah. We threatened... Okay. Because we threatened to tell the Environmental Protection Agency, and we felt we had enough, we were holding enough cards, aces, to be able to get away with it without going to jail.
Oh, that's beginning to toy around in some very dangerous areas, if somebody really has their mind set on doing something like this, Ed.
Well, you know, when
don't you worry
when
about
you're
that?
In the military, I mean, I had this as a young, as a captain, a science and technology officer. I had the mentality for a long time about, you know, screw the civilians, screw the whales and all that stuff, you know. We're going to kill those commies no matter what the cost. So if you grow up in an environment like that, as I did, then you have a certain mentality that you become habituated to, and you have to grow out of that, hopefully.
Screw the whales and the civilians.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Screw you guys. You know, we're going to kill those commies, and we could care less about what you think about it or how many whales we kill or whatever. So that's the mentality there.
Well, this is going to be a real natural segue into this. By the way, I wonder if you agree with me that this story is just a total monster. I mean, for this program, how do you get a bigger story than former Canadian Minister of Defense asked Canadian Parliament to hold hearings on relations with alien ET civilizations and names them as ethical, advanced, you know, nice guys? How big a story is this? It's got to be a monster.
Not to me.
Oh, no?
No. I mean, you want to talk space-based weapons. I mean, there's only one rationale for space-based weapons, and it has nothing to do with ETs.
Oh, really? All right. Hold it right there. Perhaps not to Ed, but to everybody in this audience, virtually everybody, and certainly myself. This story's a monster. So Ed may sort of, fluff it off a little bit, but no. Baby, this is a monster. As the young lady who called said, whatever else, there's something behind this. This is gigantic, all of this going on in Canada. Gigantic. It means somebody said okay. It may not mean everything in this story, but even taking the things that are in this story, for example, the assumption that whoever they are, they're going to be ethical. They're going to be advanced. I guess that's a safe assumption. They're going to be advanced, but ethical, I don't know. And friendly, I don't know. And it all relates to the question of weapons in space. But Ed says there's not one good reason that involves ETs to have weapons in space. Instead, Ed says the reason is
the Air Force could care less about ETs, but they are so happy and jumping up and down about statements like this because anything that would promote the allocation and expenditure of funds on weapons in space,
they're all for it.
Oh, you better believe it. Now let me tell you what the ultimate high ground is for the Air Force, and then we can backtrack.
Well, I did mention to the caller the cigar-chomping general. I mean, you're never going to convince him.
Well, never say never, but at least in the foreseeable future.
You're never going to convince him there shouldn't be weapons in space. Weapons are, that's his business.
Well, here's the high ground. let me tell you what the ultimate high ground is and what the Air Force wants funded, okay?
Okay.
And anything that could support that in terms of of defense against whether it's Chinese or ETs is fine. It just doesn't matter as long as the funding is there.
I'm listening.
Okay. The ultimate high ground is not orbiting nuclear weapons or things like that. Though anything in orbit art is so vulnerable. You have no idea how vulnerable things are these days without getting into classified stuff. Something hanging out there in space is it's vulnerable to space weapons that may or may not be there, directed energy weapons, and it's vulnerable to weapons, ground-based weapons, too.
Still makes a hell of a first-strike weapon.
It could be. It could be, yes.
Well, come on. You don't have any launch. You don't have any boost phase. It's already up there, baby. All you say is re-enter and hit.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great first strike capability, but it's still extremely vulnerable, and it could be shot down prior to ever being used, right?
Well,
because it's right out
there.
Well,
there's a certain difficulty with that. If you shoot down somebody's atomic space-based weapon, they get really upset, and if they have more of them up there,
well, that's what war's all about. I mean, that's what. But all I'm saying is the vulnerability aspect. You don't want
our satellites are vulnerable. I'll give you that.
You don't want the family jewels just hanging out there because they're so vulnerable and they're so easy to acquire and to shoot down.
Yes.
Even easier than an ICBM, far easier. Because an ICBM is, you know, well, we won't get into that right now. The high ground is, make a long story short, is a directed energy weapon on the limb of the moon in a crater.
Oh, this fits in so well. All right, stop right there. From, let me see, Elmer in New Jersey, Atlantic City, New Jersey. Hey, Art, my name is, well, doesn't matter, EJ from Stone Harbor, New Jersey. On last night's show, Ian was talking about possible military bases on the moon. The question I'd like to ask Major Dames is, I feel there are already military bases on the moon and other planets, for that matter, owned by the military. Wouldn't seem logical that the U.S. is disclosing this information now, because when Japan, Russia, or anyone else lands on the moon, they're going to see the bases and the aircraft, never seen by humans like myself anyway, basically admitting there's something on the moon, and if there is, who, what, where are they?
Now, the base, there's no bases on the moon. Astronomers would pick that up very, very quickly, and the word would travel fast. But the plan is, and it's a good plan, too, tactically. The Air Force wants to stick a base in a crater on the limb of the moon. Telescope up. Now, this is in a defilade position so that other directed energy weapons, particle beam weapons particularly, could not hit the base. So the beam director itself, the beam director is the thing that actually fires. Remember War of the Worlds when you saw the, in fact, Paula Wagner.
Oh, did you see the War of the Worlds?
Oh, I worked with Paula Wagner, who produced it.
Oh, man, you know, the acting, but the special effects. Oh, man, first rate.
Yeah, I'm not usually big on special effects, but that one, wow.
Oh,
that was so
baby, you know, it's worth it. It just came out on DVD, folks, and believe me, this audience is going to eat it up.
Yeah.
Sort of.
But anyway, a beam director is the actual, the operating end, the business end of the weapon after all of the capacitors start firing and things like that. When the final protons or whatever you're shooting come out of what, it could be an X-ray laser too, but any directed energy weapon, the beam director can telescope up above the crater wall, fire towards Earth, either at the ground or to something orbiting Earth, and then pop back down.
Hmm.
So that's what
the what we want, huh? Now the Chinese have already announced they're going to the moon, manned mission to the moon. What are the you're sort of a Chinese expert, Ed? What are the Chinese up to?
They know exactly what our plans are. They know every single one of our plans, and they need to be able to get there. They need to be able to beat us. They need to be able to win that war, and the only way to do it is to be the firstest with the mostest, as the old boxer said.
Well, so the Chinese are going to the moon to also set up some kind of military. Well, what do you imagine?
That's the high ground. That's the new high ground. It's not out there hanging in space or interstellar space. It's the moon itself, because the moon is a solid place from which to launch an attack, and it's protected. It's absolutely protected. Anything on this planet is no longer protected. Anything out there in space is no longer protected, because directed energy weapons are improving every day.
All right. Good.
Remember that space shot that used to, I think Richard Hoagland talks about it a lot. You see this SDS mission and this thing shooting up towards space.
Oh yes, I saw that myself.
Yeah,
yes.
The conspiracy theorists think that that's an anti-ET weapon.
You seen that bit of video yet, Ed?
The one I'm referring to?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Uh huh. Well, if you watch that bit of video, there is no question, Ed, that they're adjusting the cameras, they're waiting, they've got them pointed at exactly the right place. That damn well was a test.
Totally. They were running diagnostics on the test. I mean, that was their classified mission, so it's easy for anybody to see that, but it had nothing to do with ETs. ETs can appear on the ground without ever. You could look in space all the time.
We'll get to ETs. You're suggesting then that we need to get our weapons in space to protect against other nations like China.
That's right. To keep the military high ground, to maintain the military high ground, that's where we need to be, and that's where we're going.
Well, I guess it had to be. I mean, I guess it really had to be, didn't it? There is no choice, is there? Unless the basic nature of man changes, rather unlikely.
Correct, on both counts, I believe, my opinion.
Then we have to rule space, not just Earth, not be the greatest remaining superpower on Earth, but we have got to go, and we've got to rule in space. And if we don't, somebody will.
Affirmative. And the we...
So all these people arguing against weapons in space.
Well, it's going to happen. And what we can do, though, to kind of mitigate that is to not put nukes up there. That way we kind of get around, it's sort of a loophole, no nuclear weapons in space, but who's to say there isn't directed energy weapons up there now?
What about biologics? It's every bit as terrible. I talked about 100 megaton weapons orbiting. Suppose it were nothing but canisters full of, avian flu modified for human-to-human transmission. Who knows? You know, something awful like that.
Well, that would be more effective to... I mean, you could do that, but as a former biological warfare case officer, I will tell you right now there's some problems disseminating it, too, because you've got to burst it at certain heights. It has to be aerosolized the right way. It can't be subject to too much heat or you destroy your agent. And those
kind of... But aren't these the kind of problems that people who did the kind of work you did work on and get worked out?
Well, we didn't get them all worked out. I mean, remember that Nixon unilaterally stopped U.S. from engaging in offensive biological warfare way back.
Yeah, I know. And our ICBMs are pointed into the ocean and stuff. Maybe we stopped, maybe not. Have you seen the size of the black budget?
Yeah, well, I was part of many black budgets.
Well, right. A very miniature part, considering the billions and billions and billions and tens of billions, actually, that go into the black budget. I mean, an amazing amount of money.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed.
So when we say that we've stopped these kinds of things, it seems to me that would be where most of that kind of money would go.
Actually, not into biologicals.
Maybe not. I'm generalizing weapons in space, whatever they would turn out to be.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money to operate out there, and especially to build a base on the moon.
But we're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
Do you have any idea when our plans will begin to manifest and be known widely that that's what we're going to do, a base on the moon and for the kind of purpose you talk about?
First of all, you have to survey the moon, too. So the Clementine mission is doing a very good job, has done a very good job of that.
Oh, you're right about that.
So that's part number one. The second is a decision on where to put it. Now, it's going to be on a limb. It's not going to be right out there on the sun face. And that's also open to, if it's an underground base, it's open to nuclear attack, right? A bunker buster fired right into the moon.
You know, I really would like to see us doing it for humanitarian, adventurous, take the next step for mankind reasons, but that's not going to be it, is it?
Well, that's the SETI program. That's the opposite end. Actually looking for them.
No, I'm talking just about going to the moon and setting up a nice bubble house or whatever we do, for peaceful purposes, but it's just not going to be, is it?
I'm afraid not. It may have been, it could have been, but under the present watch care, it's not going to happen.
All right. This article, it is an important article. It really is, Ed, no matter how you look at it.
I agree.
It's really an important article.
I agree.
All right. it assumes that the ETs that it claims were definitely, and I guess maybe I ought to begin there. It assumes we're in definite contact with ETs and have been basically, it's suggested, since Roswell. You agree that's true? You think it's true?
We're not in contact with them, but there's been contacts of various and sundry forms. But there's been no intercommunication by any means.
It would seem to suggest that.
No, that didn't happen. Are they here?
Well, in other words, that some people at some level, far above, top secret, know about all of this, know they're in who they are, what their intention is, that sort of thing.
Negative. Mm-mm.
You don't believe that?
No, I don't believe it, and I know it not to be true.
This article also assumes that they will be basically good guys. They use the word ethical.
Well, we can talk. There's only two alien types that I know of that deal with this planet. Now, there may be many more, but I am only aware of two types. And
types that you're aware of, would you apply the word ethical to both?
Jeez. To one, the one that's associated with the UFO photo that you, the Bulgarian TV photo.
Oh, that's right. Last week I had a Bulgarian UFO piece of footage, actually, which was frankly better than most. You know, I mean, most are kind of fuzzy and far away and hard to make out, whatever. This one was pretty damn graphic. It had, a house or whatever in front to give you a kind of a scale. It was better than most. That's why I put it up there, just because I thought it was better than most, Ed. And you took a look at that, huh?
I and David Rosetta, one of my team members, his photograph is up on your website. He was given that as a totally blind target. He was not told what the target was. He was only given a set of numbers. In fact, I have them right here. He was given 7788-9455, and that's it. He was told to target that. I put those numbers. I cropped out that particular image and put those numbers there. Now we go into a problem completely unbiased.
Let me get to the website here. Hold on. I didn't realize you had that up there tonight.
No, I have my team members up there.
Are you saying you've got a photograph on the website?
I have all of my team members' photos up there.
Okay, it's on your website, right?
No, it's on yours. Coast to coast.
Oh, there it is. All right, the Magnificent Seven. What a wonderfully descriptive name, the Magnificent Seven.
So David Rosetta is a guy in white there with a black shirt. He was given this target completely blind. Now, it didn't take him more than about 20 minutes.
This is how it's done in remote viewing, folks. A number is assigned to a project, and Ed, that's what he did. In the U.S. military, primarily, he was a teacher. He assigned these numbers that then result in somebody beginning to search.
Well, mind, unconscious knows everything. You can't fool unconscious awareness. Is just the tip of the iceberg.
So that's all you gave him.
That's
that number you just gave us.
Right.
And from that, he came up with.
He knew in a matter of 20 minutes that he was working against an actual UFO instead of just an enigmatic cloud formation or something like that. And then I worked it myself front loaded. As a professional, I can get away with this. We came up with the same data and the same sketches and things like that. Now, that thing, let's just call it, for a beginning conversation, a capsule. Let's just say that for now, okay? When you go inside that capsule, it appears like there's this frenetic, energetic form moving around. And an inexperienced viewer would not know what that is and assume it's some type of a life form they've never seen before that's made up of electricity. But in fact, what's happening is that this thing is spinning at relativistic speeds. And you, in order to really sketch and describe the life form, you have to stop it. You have to follow it back to its origin, which in this case, the origin of that particular capsule, and I'll have more to say about capsule in a minute,
yes.
Is a planet that's far, far away, way, way far away.
Sound like the beginning of a Star Wars movie.
Okay, this is far.
All right, so you're verifying that what I had up there, this Bulgarian UFO or saucer, because it was that good, you could see it.
you picked a good one, but it's actually not a vehicle or anything else like that. What it is, it's the projection of a chamber or a vessel on another planet that people get into. I'm laughing because when I tell you about what they look like, they don't look like people. It's no one that you want your sister to marry. When they get into this thing and they turn it on and they direct it to places, it's actually a projection. It's sort of a how can I explain this? It's not like telerobotics, but it punches through.
Is it like a holograph?
It's more than that because it's got energy in it. It contains energy. It's an energy projection, and they can actually move. They can't interact with a distant site, a remote site, but they can use it as an observation post.
All right, hold it right there. The video footage of this craft is significant. I thought so when I found it. I think so now. And Ed is presently underlining that for us, and so we put it back up there. That is to say, the importance of it. It's a clear disc. It's clearly gigantic because you have something to actually, you know, reference it to in both a zoomed shot and then one not zoomed, and then, boom, it's gone like that behind the structure, and it's gone. But Ed has remote viewed this object that you can now go look at it on the website and says there is really something, really something to it. We'll be right back. No ego in remote viewing, but boy, I'll tell you, there's a little bit in naming teams. The Magnificent Seven, right there on the front page. And now, just above the Magnificent Seven, perhaps inappropriately above, we have this craft. Ed, they can go see it for themselves. It is, I thought when I, you know, I get a lot of stuff like this, Ed. Good, bad, obviously fake. And then every now and then, something as good as this. It really is pretty good, isn't it?
Well, actually, I've seen many like that, and I'm familiar with this type of enigma because we've looked at it before. It's just that you happen to pick one that's real. It really is associated with an extraterrestrial, I don't want to say race, because when I describe what it's associated with, you have to make your own decision about that term. It may be a misnomer.
Is it a misnomer? I mean, how close can you come to describing what we're talking about?
Oh, we can come pretty close. So we've sketched them. We've sketched what lives on that planet.
Oh, fine. Well, let's stop and hear about that. I would very much like to know physically, to our eyes, to our senses, how would these beings appear?
Okay, but I don't want to leave you with this idea that this is the only. This is the only extraterrestrial race or other intelligence on this planet, because
okay.
The one that the Canadian official, ex-official, is referring to probably is the other type of entity that my team wants to contact. So let's get back to this one here associated with the Bulgarian enigmatic object.
By all means.
They reside on a world very far away. We don't know how far, but we know it's not in the solar system, and it's very far away from our star, the sun. Excuse me. They look something like they're generally about 2.5 to 3.5 feet tall. They have two stages. One is a larval stage, which is intelligent. Think of it as a teenager, and the other is an imago stage, which looks like something between a water beetle, a wasp, and an ant. If you put those ideas together, that's what these things look like.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Now, what I was interested in after David and I actually confirmed it for ourselves that this thing was associated with life forms, what were they doing here? What was so important about this planet here? And that's what really surprised me.
Flies? Food?
No, you know what? Let me explain this to you. It appears that they have no interest in us, in humans.
Good.
We're we're very anthropocentric. I mean, you would think that, well, look, we've got all this stuff. They're interested in that. Uh-uh. They're not. They're interested in a couple of marshlands in the Caribbean.
Huh.
And
how about a timeshare in Bermuda?
Yeah. Well, when I have done my best, not just this time, but in other times when I roll across these folks, to try to figure out what it is that they're looking at. And the closest that I can come is there may be some type of a natural, invisible to the naked eye, our naked eye, elemental type of thing, like a sprite or a fairy, those ideas in mythology.
Now, I want to ask a question.
Sure.
How does what you just described, pretty horrible, by the way, construct what we saw in this video?
They get it. They're extremely technologically advanced. I think horrible is anthropocentrism. What they probably feel the same way about it, the way we look. But anyway, very, very, very technologically.
We're not flying around their planet. They're flying around ours.
It isn't really flying around. It's projecting into our planet, and they cannot interact with
projecting
matter.
Projecting around, then. Anyway, yes. Moving around.
Right. They get into a chamber or a vessel, and there's a type of a switchboard that with one of their many arms, they manipulate. And I don't know how they do this because I don't understand the technology. And they can point this thing around the galaxy and pop in wherever they want. How they do that, I do not know, because I don't understand physics. I don't even understand what they're looking at, because in remote viewing, if you don't have a memory or an experience, you can't perceive something. I have no label. I have no way of objectifying what these things, these beetles, I don't mean John
what
Paul.
What you gonna call them, beetles, all right.
But they're
capable of interstellar travel, exceeding the speed of light, virtually instantaneously, you suggest, popping from one place to another.
Correct. And we've tried to understand in some ways how they do this, and the only thing that we can come up with is an analogy as laypersons, as trained observers, is that they're bypassing space-time and they're going into another dimension and popping back out.
Well, not so left fieldish, really, I suppose. Black holes and...
No, it's not a black hole. The technology is present there at this chamber level where they're working. They've got the technology right there, and they tune it. They fine tune it, and they point this thing somehow to where they want to go. And it's like a window opens. Even though they're still on their planet, it's like it's a tunnel opens and they can see into this other place.
All right. Let me draw an obvious possible implication of why they'd be interested in these marshlands. That would imply, anyway, that marshlands, this kind of environment, is relatively rare and prized. Yes?
Yes. I mean, I could take a swag. The swag is that they're actually looking at miniatures. They're looking at insects that probably don't exist on their planet, which look so much like them.
Huh.
In terms of natural history, they're probably fascinated with them. I mean, think about if we went to their planet and there were little homunculi that looked like us but were as intelligent as a beetle.
Okay, but if these are intelligent beetles, obviously very intelligent, interstellar travel,
mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they immediately recognize the difference between, I don't know, it's like us looking at an ape, you know. Maybe we were once an ape, I don't know. But
Maybe it's that. Maybe they're looking at something that they perceive as part of their...
But we're so obviously intelligent compared to bugs.
They probably run across a whole bunch of folks like us out there. And this is probably the most interesting thing on our planet. It's something that maybe...
The bugs are more interesting than are we.
Could be. Never know. I mean, we haven't studied their natural history, their sociology, anything like that. The universe is teeming with life anyway. But these guys, they drop in pretty often.
But not for us. They're after the marshland. Hence all the sightings near swamps and marshes.
We don't know what they're looking at. We don't have the tech base in our heads, the experience to fathom or put labels on what the heck it is they're interacting with in terms of their ideation, if they have that at all. We don't know.
Boy, this is really new stuff. What about this oft-described gray alien?
Okay, now let's get into the other ones that we know about, the ones that we actually are attempting to meet with. And we feel that we have to meet them on their terms. And what their terms are is not a beacon, not things like not replicating their something that they can see and know that we know about them. It's on their terms, meaning you have to use an advanced consciousness tool, which to them evidently is pretty important. It means a leap in terms of possibly an evolution of man to discern what it is that they want you to do to meet. And in this case, it's a place to go. It's not something you build. It's not this thing in contact, this apparatus. It's a place. That's number one. Number two is that you would not have known what that is without using advanced consciousness tool, and this, in our terms, remote viewing.
Right.
So we're going, the place that they demarked, it took me about a year to really find the location. It's very difficult to find a location. To find a location that turns out to be elegant in terms of agenda. It's an elegant place. So we're going to go there and wait. And I'm going to film this, too. In fact, I'm going to film it with IR as well as low-level light cameras as well, and put this on film and see what we have, and then take that to some people. I've talked about this in your show before. I think that meeting will be important. And their terms are, you cannot know what their terms are unless you use remote viewing.
All right.
Now, they're the ones that...
Since we don't know what their terms are, right?
I know what the terms for meeting are. The terms for meeting
perhaps
are...
Perhaps you know that, but you don't know their final major agenda.
No, I do not.
Yes.
I don't, and these are the ones that abducted Travis Walton.
Okay, but if you admit that, acknowledge that, Ed, then how can you not suggest that it might be prudent to build something to defend ourselves with? Since we don't know their objectives.
I can't even answer that, Art.
Well, you can try. You can try. It's a very important question.
I think I can only answer for myself, or I can only speak for myself. I am not bringing a weapon of any type, nor am I allowing any of my team members who are armed to go there with any weapons. Because I feel that that's barbaric. And I feel it's a symbol of barbarity. I really do. What I plan on doing is taking Brent Miller, who you see in those photos there, one of the Magnificent Seven, pushing him out there, backing off maybe with a 50 caliber machine gun or running like hell in case he's vaporized or disappears. No, just kidding. I can only answer this for myself.
The problem for most of us, many of us, in this country, is that we understand that in all of history, every time a nation or a group has become weak, they've become extinct shortly thereafter. You know, if you don't defend yourself, you're dead. That's hard to overcome, Ed. You know,
Neville,
it's really hard to overcome.
Yeah, I'll be like Neville Chamberlain, come back with a piece of paper, you know, and say, here, you know, they're friendly to serve man.
Well... If you don't know their motives, you can't rule it out.
I don't know anything with regard to them. I have no idea what's going to happen. I just feel that this Earth is heading in downhill spiral very rapidly as a result of mankind, overpopulation, and our agendas. And that anything's better than the way we're going now. And so, why not ask for a little help and see what's what?
The environmental news, Ed, is dire indeed. And... you know, for the people who just went through the recent hurricane season and who have been weather watchers and seen the amount of violent weather going on and so many other things. In fact, you know what, Ed? I sort of led you astray tonight because of the importance of this story, and we can even come back to it, but we should cover a couple of things that I know were advertised that you would cover, and I know a lot of people are listening for them. You talk about a destructive Seattle-Tacoma earthquake. And then, of course, black mold, one at a time. The Seattle-Tacoma earthquake, a lot of my friends are up in that area, Ed, and they're going, oh, no, Seattle-Tacoma, give me a break. Why does it have to be us again?
Yeah, it looks like a destructive one too, and it's not too far away. Although our timelines still are still a real bugbear for us in our work. However, it's coming up, and we just, in terms of an event horizon, it's pretty close. It's looming big in terms of remote viewing. We just can't see. We can't measure the distance. We don't have this parallel
view. Ed, you call it an earthquake.
It's big.
Is it volcanic at all in nature?
It could be, but most of our data is showing just shaking and quaking. However, Don Stoltz, whose photo was one of
I noticed quite prominently, actually. Don was quite prominent.
Don did, her data does suggest that the origin of the quake is in the mountains, although I looked at her data well, had scrutinized it well, and it doesn't show a volcano. So,
You're just thinking earthquake.
Yeah, big earthquake.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the old problem, the old question back again. The moment you say something like this, next everybody wants to know when.
We're going to try to work on that in January if it hasn't already occurred, because we have some new techniques, and as a team we're going to do it together. But all I know is, like, 2006 is about the best that we can do with that.
2006.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's a little bit of time anyway.
Well, I don't know when in 2000.
All right, when you say big earthquake, how big?
It's destructive enough to break streets, take buildings down, and cause seawater to come inland.
That's a very big earthquake.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
That's a very big earthquake.
It's big. It's going to be a big one.
Can you... Seattle, Tacoma, how close? Do you know? I mean, is it like a dead center, epicenter, or what?
Don't know. We were just looking at the destruction, sketching the destruction in the city itself. So I don't know where the epicenter is.
Is the Space Needle still there?
I don't know. That's how we identified. At first we thought it was San Francisco, but when we identified Seattle because of sketching the Space Needle, but didn't look any further. I mean, sometimes there's some things you don't want to know.
Well, was it vertical? At the moment?
It wasn't looking too good.
Oh, it wasn't?
It was tilted.
It was tilted?
It was tilted.
There you have it, folks. The Space Needle tilted. You're sure this wasn't Paris, right? It was definitely the needle.
Yeah, well... it's hard news to broadcast. But it's Seattle. Mm-hmm.
If you lived in that area, Seattle, Tacoma, you would move?
I wouldn't want to be downtown.
Do you believe enough in what you're saying that if you lived there, you'd leave or you'd move?
I wouldn't want to live or work downtown. Downtown. That's all.
All right, well... A year, maybe a year, huh?
I'd say at the most.
At the most. That's very close in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Black mold.
This is a big one because it's happening now, and I want to alert people to this. It's very, very important. Because of all the hurricanes and the water problems in the eastern seaboard and the Gulf Coast, this black mold problem isn't just a problem. It's deadly. There's so much mycotoxins that are being produced from this black mold, and that's the byproduct of the growth, that it is going to cause death. And I'm using the D word this time. People are going to die because of this.
And it will begin in the areas that were hit by the hurricanes.
It is beginning now. It's happening right now and going to get worse as the months progress.
Hold on, Ed. Black mold. Certainly in the areas that were ravaged by the hurricanes this season. God, it was an awful, awful season, but that's sort of another topic unto itself. Ed, certainly in those areas, black mold would be a logical fear, and you know what's going on. I mean, it's behind all the wallboard, it's everywhere.
And it's going to explode in terms of a problem. People need to be really on their toes and alert for this too. When they start experiencing all of the symptoms associated with mycotoxin poisoning.
You're saying not only is there black mold, we know there's black mold, but there is going to be a lot of poisonings that happen. In other words, where is this going?
There are going to be a lot of people that die. I'm talking deaths here. As a result of it, it's that much of a problem. And it's a huge financial problem, obviously, as well.
All right. You also talk about some kind of prion disease, a viral as well.
When we look over the horizon at things, you know, coming down the pike soon, this avian flu problem is going to hit North America as well. It's going to hit the U.S.
Hold on, slow up. I really want to ask you about avian flu. I've been watching very carefully, trying to separate the BS from what's real, and what's real really looks scary as hell with avian flu. If it really is transmitting from person to person or becomes that way, then it's got what? About a 55% or better mortality rate now, I think.
Let's see. I think it's 60. If I'm 60? Not mistaken.
Yeah. All right. It's real high. A lot of people are going to die.
Well, we did not pick that up in the near term. What we picked up in sketch were lime pits full of birds in the United States. And in essence, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, ironically, is not a result of pesticides, hypothetically, but it's a result of avian flus. But later on, we're picking up lime pits with cattle and cows in them, which is not avian flu. It's a prion disease. And
well, you always talked about cows.
Well, you know what? We picked this up in the military unit 20 years ago. Two things that have been on the event horizon that loomed so large, they popped up 20 years ago in our work in the military unit, looking at things to come. One was what we call the kill shot, the solar events, and the other was disease and dying human babies, because there's no milk for the babies. Now we understand.
That's right. You've been talking about that for years.
But because it was such a big thing. And then about 10 years ago, we were looking at the idea of a global economic collapse. And when we found it, we thought it might be because of World War III or something like that. But it was not. It was because of disease.
God, I do remember you saying that.
I've been saying it for 9.5 years.
Yeah, you have. It's true. It's true. And near as I can tell, this, you know, there's a bunch of crap, as there always does, floating around the Internet about how this is just somebody's scheme to profit or something or another. This is real. As far as I can see, if the fears come true, and the fears are saying it not if, but when. And I mean, these are legitimate scientists who are saying not if, but when, with regard to it being a pandemic.
We can't. That exceeds our limitations as viewers, as professionals. All we can do is look at the next thing up. We just can't adjudge how far ahead it is. It's that same problem we keep running into.
Yeah, but you're basically saying you see it. You see some sort of disease that creates mass death.
It may not be just one. It may be several. But there's something that's just as bad that we've been seeing for a long time too, and that is a rush to market a vaccine which we know is going to be defective. And this is what, in terms of biblical revelation, was called the mark of the beast. This defective vaccine that's rushed to market.
No kidding.
Yeah, what we're doing as a team now is attempting to discern whether or not there's a natural prophylaxis and treatment for these various variations of avian flu.
And I cannot imagine telling somebody something more likely to result in mass numbers of people saying, hell no, I won't take it.
Well, you know, that's what, in fact, any trained remote viewer, if they look at that topic, that biblical passage, they can do the same thing with a Nostradamus.
You're saying they'll get the same result.
They'll get the same results. You know, and if you think about 3,000, 4,000 years ago, somebody trying to describe what a television is or what a computer is or what a telephone is or a car, an automobile, it's beyond their ken, but they do their best, and they put it in terms that are in terms of the vernacular then. Well, I mean, I had the same problem with some of these ET races. You know, how do I describe what propulsion is? Scientists have often asked me out in the field when we're doing proprietary ET studies. These are some of the best scientists in the U.S. and engineers, you know. Ed, what's the propulsion system behind this thing?
Sure.
I don't know. I have no idea how the damn thing's moving, because it's beyond my ken.
Yeah.
There's nominally, what, 100 million years ahead of us or something like that?
Yeah, I've got that. I can see why you really could not, even if you could see it, you couldn't understand it.
Right.
So, yeah. All right, well.
So in this case, the prevention may be worse than the cure. If when we're dealing with a vaccine that's rushed to market.
All right, you teased me with, moving on here, something that you say will be very controversial. That's all we've had this morning. I mean, how could it be more controversial than what we've done so far?
Oh, it can be. There's something I'd like to try, something I'd like to show your... We talked about the advent of mind warfare, particularly with regard to the Chinese. The Chinese are pulling ahead of the rest of the world in terms of mind warfare. Remember,
I've heard that, yes.
They don't have the proscriptions, and their paradigms are different. They perfectly accept. Some of your listeners may have read my article in Black Belt magazine last month about Qigong masters, how they can do amazing things using mind over matter at the local sense, the psychokinetic sense. Stick their hand through the side of a glass jar and pull out a thread without changing the makeup of the glass, those kinds of things. But that's locally. What I'm talking about in terms of mind warfare is affecting that at a distance. And I want to show you something. I want to give you an example, a demo of what I mean, a gross demo, but nevertheless a demo of mind warfare.
All right.
Okay?
I think all right. I don't know. I reserve the right to edit this as we go.
I completely understand.
All right.
I'm going to open Pandora's box now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I want to give you an example of a psi attack. Now, you already have sort of a taste of this, and we're not going to do this again, so don't get nervous. You remember your clock?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the clock was able to fix itself. I think you have one of those clocks that are tuned to the National Period of Standards.
That's right.
Okay. If you did not have a clock like that, and let me revisit this for your listeners. We used an en masse attack against a clock in Art's studio. And the clock slowed down. He knew it slowed down because what I didn't know is he had two of the same clocks, similar clocks, in the studio, and the one we looked at slowed down vis-a-vis the relative to the other one.
That's a fact.
But it could retune itself and get back on time again. A regular clock would have stayed.
That's why I like it, Ed.
I understand. A regular clock would have stayed slow, and you would have had to manually reset it. So that's an example of mind at a distance, at telekinesis, okay? But that, in certain circumstances, telekinesis can be used as a weapon, can be used in a psi attack.
For example?
Well, I'm going to give you a little exercise. I'll show you a little exercise here that's akin to the use of remote interference, which the Chinese are developing and which my team is attempting to master.
How much do you know about the depth and the breadth of the Chinese program in this area? I am really quite curious about that.
They're using children because children, I think it's fun. So you remember the movie long ago, Village of the Damned?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's like that. The children don't know any better. So when they're under the direction and guidance of a People's Liberation Army colonel who can really direct their minds, they can use their minds to acquire a target, to actually remote view it, to attack it, and then use remote viewing again to do damage assessment. And never ever be inside NORAD or whatever.
The concept, of course, is abhorrent to Americans to use children like that. But imagine the Chinese. Would they do it? Are they doing it? Yes, they would do that.
Well, the KGB, remember the KGB, now the FSB, they had no qualms about taking out children either.
All right, the advantage of using children is?
You don't have to ask them to open their minds because their minds haven't closed yet. So they think
they're already, one thing they don't know what they're being asked to do is impossible.
That's correct. That's correct. But you can do the same thing with closed minds if you know how to do it. And I'm going to give you an example of that in a moment. Okay? It can be effectively, you can do the same thing as a brute force attack, but it has to be done the right way. Now, I do not teach this. I want people to know that I teach remote viewing. I do not teach psi war fighting skills. That is not something I teach. So people need to know that right now. Listeners want to jump on a bandwagon and say, oh, I want to learn this. Uh-uh. I don't teach it. No, just remote viewing.
Why?
It can be misused. And it can be misused. That's why. Now, if it has to be used defensively to counteract something, that's a different story. But you don't want to put it in the hands of untrained people. Don't try this at home, folks, type of thing.
Well, the Chinese are developing it as hard as they can, using children. Horrible as that is.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm just saying I don't teach this to the public.
And causing what kind of effects, in your opinion? What are they able to do specifically?
Right now, all the effects are there in China because they're practicing and training to fight. They're training to against calibrated targets there in laboratories. But once it goes outside of the laboratory, probably the best targets would be geosynchronous satellite systems. Anything that has a sensitive magnetic field. Because mind can really affect magnetic fields if it's done the right way. And also, there's one specific material, one interesting material that's extremely responsive to mind interaction.
And that is?
It's proprietary. I can't say what it is. Cannot say what that is because we're researching it right now. Remember the old CIA research of the size?
Well, that doesn't suggest, wouldn't that material, whatever it is, suggest something about the nature of the energy being used in the first place?
We are affecting when mind is directed and coherent, just like a laser. Once you direct mind focus, mind energy, it becomes very coherent, and it affects a magnetic field.
Uh-huh. But if there is one particular material that is more easily affected with that kind of power, that would be very valuable because you could then begin to conclude the nature of the power that has done the damage.
We can deduce certain things.
You bet.
Already by looking at it, by knowing that we're affecting magnetic fields.
Is it burned? Is it is a piece of it gone completely? Dysfunctional in some manner?
No. Transient charges, transient electrical impulses.
Well, that's pretty ruinous, all right.
It can be, or it may not be. I mean, in some cases, it doesn't. In a lot of cases, it doesn't do permanent damage. But the example I'm going to use in a moment is one where we induce a transient effect, but we have an objective in mind, too. So if I may.
Well, you can keep your mind off my clock.
I certainly will. We will have nothing to do with your studio
or
coast to coast at all.
That's good. All right, good.
Okay. So unlike the clock exercise, we're not going to have immediate feedback either, but that's okay because this is just for demonstration purposes, okay?
Well, okay.
All right, so for ethical reasons, which will become apparent, I have to ask for volunteer recruits from your listening audience at this time. Only those of you who are willing to participate in this exercise, get ready. Okay, your unconscious knows what the target is. Your conscious awareness does not, and I don't want it to know. Because thinking will screw this up. There's no thinking allowed here. But ethically, I have to alert your listeners.
Wait a minute. Ethically, I'm not sure that we can go on with this.
Well, I was wondering if you would say that. So
well,
that
I think I'm saying it, unless you can talk me out of it.
I think I can talk you out of it knowing you. Knowing you, I think I can talk you out of it.
All right.
Okay?
Go ahead, try.
And I think you'll be okay with this. I really do.
Talk me out of it.
Huh?
Talk me out of it.
It's something that you would condone, based upon my knowledge of you.
All right. I said that I wasn't going to do any more of these experiments, not mass mind concentration to affect the weather or even things that I consider positive. I started to consider it to be dangerous,
okay.
Ed, and I stopped the experiments altogether.
All right,
so,
then let's not do it. What I'll do then is just I'll use it as an – we won't do it. We won't do it as an exercise, and I'll tell you what I was going to do, which will be just as illustrative
all right,
in terms
good.
Of –
Okay. Go ahead.
In terms of mind warfare, this would be a brute force attack. That instead of using a trained team that has trained over and over again to do this, it would use a lot of people. Now, this is how healers work formerly in the Soviet Union. They've used lots of people. There are even savants in India, Sai Saji Baba.
You're preaching to the choir, Ed. I know it works.
Okay. Here's what we were going to do. We were going to induce a transient electrical charge in a certain target, and that we know by remote viewing. I told you that we were looking at Al-Zarqawi's hideout.
Yes.
Okay. He's got a detonator in a vest next to him, and we were going to induce a transient charge
to detonate that.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
See, I see. I don't know, Ed. I even though. He's a bad guy.
I told you there's some ethical problems involved with this.
Absolutely cannot make the listeners part of murder.
I told you that's why I
It's murder. That's murder.
It's essentially.
Even though he's a bastard, it's still the murder of a bastard, and you can't, you just can't put people into that situation.
That's why I asked for volunteers. It's essentially an assassination attempt disguised as remote interference experiment.
Oh, my God.
It's an intent to terminate it with extreme prejudice.
Whew, man,
but that's what I mean about.
I'm really glad I asked.
Yeah, that I kind of knew you.
I'm so glad I asked.
Now, this is what I mean about some circumstances where this kind of effect can be useful in terms of war fighting.
Could I submit some other names?
Offline, perhaps. Email me. Anybody I know? I am afraid to ask.
We just drop it right there.
Yeah. So instead of the clock, instead of this case, a clock, the clock being the magnetic field being affected,
yes.
What we would have tried to do en masse at once. And it has to be orchestrated, has to be directed, and it has to be done very rapidly within 3 seconds. It has to be directed like an orchestra. And is try to induce a transient charge in the detonator. So if this instead of a detonator was a sensitive piece of electronics in let's say an F-117 or an Aurora or a geosynchronous satellite, something like that, the effects, unless it can reestablish homeostasis, the system has redundant abilities, for instance, or can reset itself, the effects would be permanent and may.
You're saying without qualification that what you just suggested really could be done. That story originally broken on Nightline. Many of you may remember that program. And oh my, what a lot we've had today, tonight, this morning, from Major Dames. So much to comment on, and I want to give those of you in the audience an opportunity to do that and to put his feet to the fire if you so desire. And that's what those numbers are for. They're a little bit different on the weekend, so you need to pay attention. We will be back and apply the feet thusly in a moment. Collective little minds were probably wrapped around that detonator as I yanked them away at the last possible second. Mage Dames, welcome back. I'd like to, devote this hour to allowing the audience to react to some of what they've heard, and I know there's going to be a lot of big reaction. You've already earned a promotion. That is to say, a promotion of your product. So, fire away. You have a product that you are willing to sell to people that will teach them to remote view. Bottom line, right?
That's what I do. I teach. I'm a professional educator. Yes, I have a set of DVDs that allow people to learn to do what I do.
All right. You've earned this plug. If they want to learn to do what you do in remote view, who do they call? What does it cost? That kind of stuff.
They can go to my website, learnrv.com, where I teach, and find out, get all the background information and talk to me or my team members.
Yes.
Or they can call anytime, toll-free, 866-607-8439.
Okay. 866, that's toll-free number, 1-866-607-8439. And how much?
There's four DVDs, and they buy them separately. It's anywhere from about $70. If they buy the whole, if they buy all four, it's $249.95.
From $70 to $249.95, and the $70 deal gets you what?
Just the first DVD to see, to get your feet wet, to see if that's just something you really want to do. Because
will you see enough on that DVD to decide if you really want to invest and go the whole way with this?
You're not just looking. It's an actual application. You're actually doing it. It's a teaching DVD. I only teach. I don't demonstrate.
Okay. But you'll know enough in the first DVD to know if you want to progress to the rest. All right. So mm-hmm. There you are. Okay. That said, unless you have anything else you really have to get on, I'd like to progress to call. So is there anything else that we haven't covered or need to fill in here?
No, but just in case we don't have time at the end of this, I just want to let you know that I'm heading back to Ukraine, so I'll see you after the holidays, and I wish you well.
Carolyn says by computer, hi, Ed has great taste. I'm half Ukrainian, and everyone knows Ukrainian women are hot.
Like the Beatles said, yeah, but when back in the USSR, Ukraine girls really knock me out. They leave the West behind. I have to agree.
Oh, man. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Michael calling from Brentwood, Tennessee.
You're going to want to get that phone looked at, Michael. You have hum.
Oh, it's... I rarely use this phone. I think it's...
Yeah, I can tell. It's rust. All right, no. go ahead.
Anyway, like I said, I'm from Brentwood, Tennessee, a little town outside of Nashville. So anyway, I've been listening to you and Ed Dames for several years, going back to, oh gosh, early 90s. My question to Ed was about your mind control, this remote viewing. You've touted this for several years. So how can you, as a remote viewer, detonate an object just through the power of the mind?
All right. There you go, Ed.
Well, there's a lot I could say about this technically, but it's not remote viewing. We're actually just we're turning our attention onto something.
Remote influencing, technically, right?
Yeah, it is. But remote viewing is generally a passive act, except for one thing. You become part of the history of the thing that you look at forever. Once you turn your attention to it, somebody can reverse engineer that and go back and look at that object and track that back to somebody looking at it. You become part a page in the history of that object. When you have a lot of people, brute force, turning their attention at one time towards an object, the same thing happens that happened to Art's clock, especially if there's a magnetic field, a sense of the magnetic field that's associated with the device. There's an influence on the magnetic field. How that works and why that works, we do not understand, but we don't understand remote viewing anyway.
Well, all right, Ed, you know the various experiments, do you not, that involve sitting in front of a computer with a computer program. I happen to have that program.
I know.
And you
people...
influence the result of a random program.
Well, I evaluated that program for the creators.
But aren't we talking the same stuff here?
We are. I just have to point out one thing technically about that program. Your heart produces a very strong magnetic field. Your brain produces a magnetic field too, but your heart produces actually a strong magnetic field. In fact, that can be used as a diagnostic device. And believe it or not, if you're too close to the computer, it's not your mind, your brain, or the brain-mind interface that's causing the change in the computer, the change in the image. It's actually the magnetic field in your heart affecting the very sensitive instruments in the hardware.
Okay. I know you told us the name of the substance that was so easily affected with
this kind of
thought, but would you say it again, please?
Are you trying to trick me into doing that? I did not say that. I told you it was...
Oh, you didn't... Oh,
Sorry.
No, it's proprietary.
So you said that was what? Classified? Proprietary?
Proprietary, yes, because we're working on a device.
So you really don't want to mention it?
I can't. No, I cannot.
All right. Yeah. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Good evening, gentlemen. BD from Las Vegas. My question for Ed tonight, Art, is what separates this whole technique that he uses from what has been around for thousands of years through the use of, like, shamanic abilities?
Nothing. Except this technique was developed by U.S. intelligence, by the National Intelligence Agencies, to gather as much information in as short a period of time as possible, and I mean technical information.
So there is a difference between what you and a shaman do. You at least claim to be, I believe, a far more disciplined method of the gathering of the information.
It's much more rigorous, and because in the past, savants and shamans and clairvoyants did not have to produce the kind of information that we need today for intelligence purposes. You know, where's the hydrogen leak on the space shuttle?
But there is no basic difference between how it's done. That's what
correct.
The caller was asking.
We're taking advantage of the same innate faculty that all of us have. That's correct.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Two real quick questions, Art, if that's okay with you.
It is. Where are you, by the way?
I am in Dayton, Ohio, sir.
Okay. And your name?
My name is Brad.
Okay, Brad.
Okay. Now, Ed, I just want to say it's an honor to speak with you finally. You were actually the first guest I ever heard on Coast. I've been listening for maybe a little over a year now, and I'm still trying to get my mind kind of wrapped around the whole remote viewing thing. And it's starting to come together for me. I was just wanting to see if you can help me with the last couple of pieces. Okay, can you only remote view the future, first off?
No.
Okay.
In fact,
so
that's one of the most difficult things. The past and the present are far easier.
Okay. So I guess my two quick questions then are, first, do you remote view anything good for us? Because I know, you know, as George
What
Moore
a very good
you,
question. Do you ever remote view anything good?
And second off, on 9/11, there were a lot of things that went on in airplanes across this country that we did not have the opportunity to see. We have just heard stories. Did you get the chance to remote view those scenes? And if so, could you tell us what you saw? And I'll take both answers off the air.
God, that's a beauty.
I'll go backwards. The remote viewing is a lot of work. You can ask, if you go to my website, thelearnrv.com, and you see those individuals up there on our site now, the photos, ask them. You don't have to ask me. Ask them how much work this is, and whether or not they, you know, you really have to want information.
Okay, granted, it's a lot of work. Ed, have you ever remote viewed anything good?
I found my fiance that way.
Well, I mean, I don't mean to be negative or in any way, but I mean that remains to be seen.
Well, okay, I think that's a good thing.
I wish you the very best, but I mean, you know, these things sometimes turn sour. And...
Well, I mean, that's a matter of opinion. I'm feeling pretty good.
All right, how about, have you ever seen anything good that involves everybody? You know, have you ever come on this program and said, well, you know, we're going to hit the biggest field of oil that the world has ever seen. It's going to make Mideast look like a drop of oil.
The best things I can say in terms of good are not necessarily the future, but in terms of medical things, saving lives that way, looking at diagnosing illnesses and diseases that even the best of my students, who are some of the best doctors in the world, could not effectively diagnose, and coming up with cures for those and saving lives.
All right. You had a tremendous success with an Egyptian airliner. So you are good at what is going on in a plane. You actually showed us that. So with regard to what went on in the planes involved in the 9/11 attack.
We have not looked at that, Art.
Is that something you could look at?
Absolutely, but I mean, there's so many things that are valuable in terms of information out there, and I mean, there's a zillion things that are interesting and are mysteries. I mean, I have some pets, and that's not one of them. Is that something you want me to look at?
I don't know. I'm repeating what the caller said, Ed.
No, we have not, and I have no desire to do that unless somebody asks me to for a good reason.
Yeah, you know it's going to be bad.
I have a pet, the gold. Why should I pull my team and I away from that when we need to go out and get that strong box? That's a good thing.
Well, you know, you need to show up here with the gold.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's all there is to it. All right.
I can't do that if I keep pulling my team away and looking at, you know.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
You two guys are really funny tonight. I'm getting that, you know, I'm getting a good laugh. Okay, this is Ann from Walnut Creek, California. Well, I would like to point out before I ask my question that according to you, Ed, you said that some of your people have won in Las Vegas or won the lottery a few times, so that's good.
Well, that's true.
Oh, that's your back-to-back, actually.
Pardon?
Back-to-back
lottery.
Back-to-back.
Yeah.
So what I was going to ask you about, usually I can ask a pretty clear question, but I would like to just mention some elements because I don't know whether there's a connection. Apparently the Japanese have sent some sort of a probe to a comet. Am
asteroid.
I right about that?
An asteroid, yes.
Okay,
I'll try
an
to
asteroid.
Continue.
And then also there was something, you know, I was sort of half listening to the news about how there had been a whiff of powder from the previous probe or the previous thing where we exploded. And anyway, the Japanese are planning on bringing something back, which I think is just ridiculous. But I'm wondering, is it possible that there could have been some sort of what I would call spectrometry, so that when they caused the explosion, and there seemed to have been some sort of a flash that they claimed was unexpected, is there any possibility that they could have taken some sort of an image or, you know, gotten some sort of information that we're capable of analyzing, but, you know, but it's very advanced and nobody really knows this, to analyze what was in the substance that you know sprayed all over the place,
which they did.
Okay, and yeah. Then I'm wondering, is there any connection, or is it just parallel activity of disease substances that would come back not only from the Japanese thing, but that might have been analyzed and somehow replicated.
All right, let's hold it there. I've got the very heart of the question. She is concerned about the Japanese bringing back a sample, and there probably is some risk involved in that. Ed?
Well, I never thought about anything like that. That's not anything that would ever occur to me, but anything's possible, I guess. I mean, this thing's... Andromeda strain.
You have talked so much about the possibility of an Andromeda strain-like result that you've seen with that many people sick. So what if it's not the bird flu? What if it is something the Japanese cart back from something in space?
It's nothing that I've looked at. That's all I can say.
Okay. International Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. It's nice to speak to you.
And you, where are you calling from, by the way?
Negril, Jamaica.
Jamaica?
Yes.
How cool is that? Okay.
if I could, just to get my mind wrapped around this, as one person put it for a second, was this on TV where there was, I hate to use names if you don't mind, where there was, I believe, also a Major McGonagall?
Chief Warrant Officer Joe McGonagall.
Joe McGonagall.
Been a guest on this program.
Oh, really?
Yes. What about him?
No, I was just trying to validate whether my mind was on the, you know, the right set of...
Yes, you are.
Yeah, that I saw on TV, and I saw some interesting things about it. And I ended up walking away with mixed feelings about it. And
you're talking about remote viewing in general?
Yeah, in general. And it's okay to have, I think, you know, some of these cynical or skeptical feelings, because I think that jerks out the truth the hardest way. Could I ask you, for instance?
Yes, yes, yes.
if a person says that we won a lottery or two lotteries back to back, how could one then want to really, really be doing anything but knocking out lotteries just for the fun of it till you're a trillionaire and then go and give everybody money in the furthest out scenario?
That's your personality. You're one of a zillion people.
That's a positive thing. Yeah. That's a positive. You know, he is...
Again, it's your personality. That would bore me. I'd blow my brains out.
It would only take you two or three Powerballs, and you'd be set for life, and you wouldn't
have to
sell CDs.
We can't do the Powerballs. We can only do the pick threes.
You know, after you'd hit so many lotteries, somebody would kill
one
you.
One or two.
After you'd hit so many lotteries, somebody would kill you.
But you're not listening. We can only do the pick threes.
Oh, really?
After hitting three lotteries, you'd be dead.
You can see the winning tickets on my website, the actual winning tickets. We teach how to do the pick three.
There you got a caller?
Yes.
Proof. You've got the lottery winning tickets on display on the website. How's that?
Well, that's fair. And just one last question.
Yes?
And as I said, I think it's okay to be cynical a little bit. It's not out of a bad intention. It truly is not.
Okay. Lay it on.
I agree. I just was.
Yeah. And I'm okay with it. I'm with you on this.
More cynical. Go ahead.
Well, no, actually, it was just a straight-on question. It was just, have you been able to really knock out some tangible, either, I was going to ask, positive or just regular, really tangible targets in terms of information? I'm familiar with some of what you've done in Russia with the submarines and so forth. Have you been able to nail, in terms of intelligence recently, any real tangible targets? And I'm really hoping for like an Osama that you're working on or something like that. And I'll listen for your answer off radio. Thank you very much.
All right. You're very welcome. So some real tangible thing that you've done lately. Now, of course, you just hit us with several earlier. Listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. Here's an interesting lottery-related question from Tony in Tennessee. Art asked Ed if proximity to an event increases accuracy at all. In other words, I viewed the lottery announcement about 7 days in advance. I got 6 out of 7 right. If I do it the day before, are my chances any better of getting all 7 numbers correct?
I don't know.
Really?
Really. It's part of the problem of time again. Mind is outside of time, so we really can't deduce anything except that we just don't understand if there are any time markers involved.
Okay, that's an honest answer. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes, sir.
Major Ed Dames, I noticed you said that you're moving to the Ukraine. Now,
Ukraine, not the. There's no article.
Just Ukraine. Huh?
Just Ukraine.
He's
Ukraine.
Sensitive about that now that he has a...
Terribly sorry.
Fiance.
I know that previously you had been hunkered down in Hawaii in one of the volcanic chambers.
Very true.
That's not... No, I have not. I was not in the chamber.
Well, you had a chamber picked out, though.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Right, okay. Well, do you have such a chamber picked out for the Ukraine?
Yes.
Or...
Perhaps an old Russian ICBM site.
Somewhere. I have a sanctuary.
Okay. I was just wondering if that might mean that the kill shot is not going to fully cover, saturate the planet at the time.
The problem is water. It's good. There'll be such a dearth of water. Being near fresh water supplies is going to be everything.
Yes, that would definitely be. Art, I would like to throw in a compliment to you and your show.
Thank you.
What I have seen with the science channels and news pieces here and there, finally the people involved with weather are going full guns, full out, taking steps they hadn't taken before, admitting things they wouldn't admit before.
It would seem so, wouldn't it?
That have just been pounded by you and the people that come on with you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir. It is true. We have pounded on this relentlessly, and unfortunately and sadly, it does seem to be manifesting itself right now.
Well, I think one of the most cogent examples was your book, Coming Global Superstorm.
Yes, I know. I all this has been based on knowledge that for some reason we've had for some time, and I'm sorry to see it manifesting. Have you looked into the future of the climate, Ed, at all?
Yes. It's not the future of the climate so much, it's just the globe in general. And it's just quite grim in terms of desiccation. There's just so much barren land as a result of solar activity, predominantly solar activity, that you really don't want to look any further, Art, whether you're a remote viewer or not.
You know, Ed, we're almost at a solar minimum right now. Very close, perhaps even at a solar minimum. You never know until they're actually passed. But we're very close to the absolute minimum in the 11-year cycle.
And yet the sun has been more active than it has been in 160 years of measurement in terms of producing more heat. And I've said years ago that scientists, solar physicists, geophysicists do not understand the linkage between solar activity and the Earth. When there's a lot of magnetic activity in the sun, there's a lot of magnetic activity in the Earth's core.
Well, there is one truth, and that is that on the downside of cycles, scientists have discovered that it's more active. You're more likely to get these big bell ringers on the downside. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How are you? It's Tim from L.A.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Dr. Dames, I got a question I'd like to ask.
Major Ed Dames.
Oh, Major Ed Dames. Excuse me.
Fire away.
First of all, I have no problems of like a psi attack on like Osama bin Laden or al-Zarqawi, but is there a way to psychically attack, I guess, the children to defend ourselves without actually hurting them? Because I don't like to see...
You can't really hurt a human being. What you can do is keep them awake at night as a team. We found out this to be true.
Well, if you detonate a bomb...
I'm talking about the individual, biological organ.
In other words, direct biological damage.
Right. The only thing you can do is just keep them awake.
I guess he's asking, is there any way you can prevent the Chinese use of children? Is that right, Colin?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly, because...
Ed?
There's
no way that I know of.
No way. See, here's a weapon you can't defend against. That.
Right, because in terms of the passive act of remote viewing, but target acquisition and damage assessment, you're not really connecting with the target in the way that you would think. You're actually going to the way the target exists as a pattern of information, and it only takes one person to do that. Whereas if you really want to affect the target, you need a lot of people, and it has to be coherently orchestrated. I don't know if that answers your question or if I got off.
It actually answers one for me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Hi, Ed.
Hi.
It's an honor to speak to you finally. I've listened to you over the program over the last few years.
The honor is mine.
Yeah, and I have a question. Could you please share with us what you know about the GLORIAD computer network, and why is the University of Illinois selected as a part of it?
I don't know anything about it.
Neither do I.
What is the GLORIAD computer network?
It's the network that connects China and Russia, processing 155 million bytes per second.
I am not aware of that network.
China and Russia. And where is this network located?
I don't know where it's headquartered at, Art. It's on the Internet. I saw it in the newspaper about 2 years ago.
Is it part of the National Academy of Sciences network?
I'm not sure. I know that Canada and the University of Illinois and China and Russia are involved in this network. And 155 million bytes per second is processed.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. I don't know a thing about it, but boy, we live in a world of networks and information, don't we? So. These things are, Ed, that's something you might look into.
I'm just a simple guy.
You know, we know the Internet exists. What other networks might exist?
Well, there's a National Academy of Sciences network, too, and that is one that, actually, I can't get into this too much. it's one that was important to us in terms of costing us some information at one time. A leak.
Oh, I'll bet that could be, sure.
Yeah.
Any network is exactly that, and it can be looked at, it can be spied upon, mm-hmm. We all know.
Right.
Gloriad, huh? That sounds like a Google item. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hi, Art. It's Rosemary in White Rock, British Columbia.
Welcome.
And I'd like to say it's an honor to speak to you and
Thank you.
Your guest, Ed, Major Ed Dames. I've been listening to you for about a year now. And I have a few questions I'd like to ask your guest. I know, Ed, that you predicted a major volcanic eruption in New Zealand.
In, Mount Taurasi.
Right. For November 5th.
No, I didn't put a date on it. I said October or November of this year was as close
as we could
get.
Did that happen?
No. They've been getting a lot of earthquake activity and increased activity, which has caused some of our listeners to get nervous. But that hasn't happened.
Okay.
Hopefully it won't.
I'd like to ask you something about, you're talking about the kill shot and safe places to be. Now, where would a place in British Columbia be a good place?
Lake Valley.
Pardon?
The Lake Valley region of British Columbia.
Lake Valley?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where that is. Yes, is that
take a look at a map of British Columbia, and it's to the west. It's to the east of the Rockies, and in the southern part of B.C.
Oh, South B.C.
We know this because we actually looked at places in North America.
Yeah, I think I've heard you talk about that previously.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and what kind of radiation are you looking at? Is it like we've already had like an X-17 and an X-28?
Which were not pointed our way, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
It might have been even more than that. Scientists aren't quite sure. It sent the scales right off the scale of the satellites that were up there to measure the largest possible thing that could ever occur on the sun, and they were wrong by a factor of quite a bit. And that was a shot across the bow, correct, Ed?
Correct. Now we're looking at heat, mostly heat. We're not looking at the protons. When I say they're coming down to the deck, means that they're going to heat up the Earth's atmosphere. So we're looking at heat. A lot of problems with desiccation. No water.
Got it. International line, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you calling from, please?
Yeah. Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm an expatriate calling from Rotorua, New Zealand. That's 5 miles away from the presently very quiet Mount Tarawera.
That close to it, huh?
Yeah. I was wondering what the source of your volcanic activity reports are that you just spoke of, Ed, and a couple other questions. Is there anything you can add to this volcano prediction?
No, except that I actually sketched accurately the actual mountain, the crater itself, all the ridges, the edges, and things like that in profile. That's and we knew that a serious eruption causing loss of life and damage to property would occur in New Zealand. But we had to actually sketch the specific volcano, and there are so many in that area. And we use remote viewing to do that.
The volcanic activity reports, there has been, the earthquake that you just mentioned to the lady before, there have been none. Where is your source for that?
No. In the area, probably 100 or 200 miles to the northeast, that area right there, that's been the only spot that's been shaken.
One last question. The eruptions are dangerous because of lava, projectiles, and ash. What would be the radius of this particular danger?
We don't know. All we know is that there's a serious risk of loss of life. That's all.
Thanks for having an international line, Art. I've always enjoyed your show and your vigilance.
You're very welcome. Keep a watch out for us, will you?
Yep, I'll call back.
All right, take care. All the way from New Zealand. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
My name's John. I'm from the Reno area. And my question for Ed, I'm a new listener and very interested, not only in the remote viewing, but particularly in the application of, I guess, for lack of a better term, what I would call the remote controlling of some device
That would be remote influencing.
Remote interference.
Interference. I'm sorry. Interference. And influencing have both been used, I think.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me there. And basically, if I understand you correctly, you're talking about using the collective energies inside of people to influence some remote object when directed properly and in the proper timing and so forth. Is that correct?
We don't like to use the word energy. Mind, the idea of mind is better. The brain, the conscious brain, is an interface between the collective mind. And when mind is focused, when attention...
Is it fair to say mind over matter, Ed? In other words, perhaps it isn't. In other words, you're creating, for example, a voltage pulse. You said many minds could create a voltage pulse and perhaps detonate something, as an example. Or perhaps overload a circuit in a satellite or something of that nature.
They can affect a magnetic field. Mind can somehow affect a magnetic field.
Okay. All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning and greetings to you both. Thank you so much for being there.
You're very welcome. Where are you?
Your program. This is Lena calling from southern Manitoba, Canada.
All right, you're going to have to yell at me because you're not too loud. Your question?
I had a comment about predictions because I've been getting premonitions and dreams and visions, and I called you on your prediction line, and, of course, it was all about water, and we've had a lot of flooding here and a lot of problems with water. But what I'm wanting to ask Major Ed Danes about is something I've been sitting on here for a few decades about some gold. Now, I know you fellows are pretty interested in gold, and this gold has been here for some time, and I'm quite certain that they haven't got it yet. We've had a lot of diversions and occurrences and events over the years that only add to the situation, making me realize that they're definitely after the gold. And I'm just wanting to know whether Major Ed Danes could remote view and see whether or not that's what they're going after with all this digging going on around here. Yeah, around where I'm located here. They've been doing a lot of digging in the last year. Actually, Art, I talked to you.
Which is, again, please, where?
Not far from the city of Winnipeg in southern
Manitoba. All right, so they've been doing a lot of digging there. Ed, know anything about that?
Nope, I do not.
Okay, simple, sorry. It was a specific question, and we don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes, I was wondering if, like, a remote viewer could be sensed by the person or, you know, he was viewing. You know,
right. Good question. Physical. Yeah, a good question. In other words, would the object, Ed, of a remote viewing, if it were a person, be aware of the fact that you were viewing him or her?
Only if they're a very gifted psychic. They're the only ones we've found. And the Russians actually, during the tenure of the Psi spy unit that I was the operations officer for and training officer, the Russians actually had very gifted psychics near their leaders in a leadership position, especially during meetings of the Soviet Defense Council, to sense whether or not we were targeting Defense Council meetings. But an ordinary remote viewer like myself, for instance, or an ordinary person who is not psychically gifted would not know that someone's targeting them.
So even you wouldn't know?
No. If I were remote viewing at the time and somebody did it, I might pick it up. But otherwise, no.
Huh. All right. Perhaps.
But you're so focused, Art. You're so focused.
One more. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed.
Yes. Things have come up about these diseases and bird diseases and all that.
Yes.
Well, there's a group here in San Francisco called San Francisco Tesla Society. I learned about a microscope that's been suppressed since the 1920s. This could be used because bacteria can be studied alive, and when it shows that, it magnifies it such that
the name of that telescope, sir?
The Royal Rife microscope.
Yeah, of course. All right. Listen, we don't have any time for any more. You know, I'm sure, a little bit about or have heard of that telescope, right, Ed?
About the microscope, yes, I've heard
okay.
of it.
All right. Listen, we don't have much time left, so I want to give you a chance once again to promote your DVDs. You have several of them, and you can get one for in the range of $70, the whole schmear for $249.95.
And my advanced training is free on the web at learnrv.com. If you want to order the DVDs, you can call 866, toll-free, 866-607-8439.
Right, 866-607-8439. Ed Ames, as always, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I put you through some hard grilling at the beginning. I appreciate your sort of stepping through that with me.
Accountability is important.
Accountability is indeed important, and remember, Ed, I'm waiting for the gold.